Welcome to Theory for Turntables, the TFT podcast. I'm Matt. That's Ryan. Ryan, sorry, I'm going to take it. I don't want to go to school. I just want to break the rules.
Well, you say you want to bang? Fuck you, sucker. I had that one actually locked up in the chamber, so I was... I had two. I was spicy handed this time,
just in case. Guys, we're doing Charlie XCX, and we are talking about Sucker, the album that was released today, but has been available to stream via iTunes Radio for the past week. So we've been listening to it, and we now it's available for everybody to listen to, whether or not you have an iDevice. This is a really interesting album. I want to lot of stuff that I want to ask you about it. I also think Charlie XCX is a really interesting sort of personality, really interesting sort of media personality, and I want to talk about that and sort of aspects of self-presentation, self-performance, and if she's a pop star, what kind of pop star is she, and what do we mean by pop, and what do we mean by star, and what do we mean by she, and what do we mean by is. But
we're gonna get down to the bottom of all of it.
it's suckers all the way down.
Suckers all the way down.
So we are going to talk about that. It's surprisingly, just before we recorded, Ryan pointed out that it is surprisingly long for a pop album.
Is it about 50 minutes?
Something like that. My friend Wikipedia will probably tell me. But yeah, it's. It's definitely. Oh no, it doesn't have the whole. It doesn't have
that's
the
40,
whole.
40:19.
Oh really?
Yeah.
That's not as long as it feels like, which is probably not. Which is probably not saying much for it. But like after Boom Clap, there is kind of a slack. There is kind of a slack passage of the album.
After a boom clap, there's a quiet fizzle.
Go listen to it now. I guess it'll only take you 40 minutes. It's on all the streaming services and whatnot, and you can get it there. And when you're done, we will be back after this message from our sponsor.
Does your heart make a sound like boom clap?
You know, it does. I've been meaning to talk to someone about it.
It's probably arrhythmia. And we're back.
Wow. So WebMD is our sponsor today. Yep. So Boom Clap was that the first single?
It was. And it was a pre-single. It was it really took off because it was on the Fault in Our Stars soundtrack. And so that when that was out earlier this year and was a big hit, the song was a big hit as a result. So that they were in tandem. So it spent a fair amount of time in the top 10 this summer and early fall, coinciding with Charlie's reign at the top, or at least overlapping a little bit with Fancy's time. Uh-huh. in the top 10, right? And so this is kind of an interesting year for Charlie XCX, right? Because Sucker is her second full length album following True Romance, and Boom Clap is her first song in which she is the sole credited artist, the first top 10 song where she's the sole credited artist. But she's had chart success before in the last few years with, you know, writing and singing the hook on Fancy, and then also for her work on Iconopop's I Love It, which I think charted, I guess, was it last year? It was out several years ago and then charted a bit after. It was one of these... It had a paper planes effect of getting big a bit after it was originally released.
Yeah, I mean I'm like really curious about this sort of gestation period, this gestation period kind of thing that's happening, right? Because I think with Lorde and with Iggy Azalea and with
Tuvalu
and with Charlie XCX, there's this sense that, like, you know, there are these kind of overnight successes where they pop onto the mainstream radar, but in all cases, it seems like they are, it seems like there was this sort of, there was this sort of gestation. There was this sort of period of sort of development, playing in the same sandbox, playing in the top 40 sandbox, but not, not at the level, maybe not at the forefront of it. And actually, sort of like Meghan Trainor, also all the people that I mentioned are notable for being, well, maybe Iggy Azalea is a little bit different, are notable for being generators of material, right? Like, I guess there was like controversy about like whether Iggy writes her own raps and
no shade, no shade.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not that's throwing shade.
That's what, because Nicki Minaj made that claim.
Oh, right. Yeah. Nicki Minaj. No shade, no shade. But you know, if you're listening to a Nicki Minaj rap, then Nicki Minaj wrote it, right?
No shade, but no shade.
But, right, like, so I don't know how seriously to take that. And so, like, maybe, okay, I will add her back to my list, right? Like, these are all, it's very important to the sort of, to the artistic project of all of these women is that they're not just interpreters of, you know, songs written by Max Martin. And that, like, even when Taylor Swift is with Max Martin, it's very clear that it's collaborative, right? And, like, she's, you know, executive producing, she's curating, she's generating material, right? Like, I think
she's
Charlie
barking orders on her on her voice recordings,
right? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she's like, exactly, she's sending the voice memos or those like iOS 8, you know, voice text messages that you can send to people. And Charlie XCX is credited, notably on this album, as the executive producer, right? Which seems to point towards there being a role for this person who is, like, this is sort of the organizing consciousness of the record, mm-hmm. right? This is the sort of ultimate decider or person who is providing the vision and direction, right?
The pop buck stops here.
Uh-huh. Yes, exactly. So this is very interesting, and I have a lot of thoughts about it, especially given an interview, an NPR interview I listened to with Charlie XCX. But I'm wondering what you're thinking of these directions and of this kind of generation of women who are pop stars who both kind of seem to be making a play for longevity, both by not blowing up too fast and by controlling the generation of material and not just the delivery of it.
Well, you know, since you're giving me this lane, I'm going to abuse it and ask you a question.
Devin, I had the question.
I know, but you seeded the conch, and I grabbed it. I wrestled it from you, and I'm going to smash your inhaler.
You know, fuck you, sucker.
Hey, sucks to your ass, Mar. Suckers to your ass, Mar.
I'd rather be a dick than a sucker.
So the question I have for you, Matt, you know, this Charlie XCX, you know, with her leopard print and her all female backing band on Saturday Night Live, is she a punk band?
The way I was going to put this question is what genre of music is she? Right? Mm-hmm. Like what you know, what is she? Okay.
I have the answer to that. Spinning class music.
Oh, that's terrible. Oh, God. At some point, we get too old to do the podcast, right?
No, I don't know. I mean, I was in a spinning class today. There were men 20 years our senior in that spinning class. So I saw my future, and it's wearing bike shorts.
Yeah, wearing the... Right, wearing either spandex shorts or else the really short American Apparel nylon gym shorts. Right?
Yeah, I think that's the way I'm going to head in my exercise clothes. I actually want to get wrestling singlets and wear them to all of the fancy spinning gyms that I'm going to. I feel like it's about in my relatively hemmed in life, that's about the most transgressive thing I think I can muster up on a regular basis.
I don't even believe that a little bit.
I mean, you don't know how like tightly ordered the social order is in these boutique, spinning and core fusion gyms at which I exercise. And I actually say, I actually did. So even though I call it spinning music, I actually did hear a dubstep or kind of an electronic dance music remix of Break the Rules yesterday while doing a TRX workout, which is a core workout. It's like a Navy SEAL workout that uses bands. It's like a body weight workout. So there's bands that are attached to the ceiling, non-elastic like taut bands, and you use them to chest press and dip and lunge and all of that. And so I did all of those things to a very EDM-y remix of Break the Rules.
So I don't want to
do your crunch. I just want to eat some lunch.
this is fantastic. I'm glad. I think we need to add like fitness to the, you know, to the set of things on our syllabus, the various, you know, gyms, fitness options, yoga, spinning, core fusion, TRX. That's one I hadn't heard of on the TFT podcast.
Theory for treadmills.
God. So yes, I think she is a punk band by breaking all the rules of everything that I think a punk band ought to be. Mm. Right? Because
that's the most punk thing that you can do. Right.
Isn't that it? Isn't it like about sort of frustrating expectations and alienating and confounding even right. your right. Like, let's talk about those your defenders.
It's like I'm not punk and I'm telling everyone, and that therefore I am punk QED.
Yeah, that's the punkest thing that you can do.
Yeah, she's recursively punk.
I mean, it was, I think, appearing on SNL, and there are SNL videos that we will link up in the show notes.
Well, and thanks to listener Ben Snickoff for putting us in the direction of those of the SNL videos.
Smitty, you got our back.
Yes.
At Snitty on Twitter, right?
Yes.
And the thing that I noticed, like there were like all kinds of aspects of self-presentation that I'm really interested in here. One is appearing backed by a power trio, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than appearing like churches, because this is, you know, mm-hmm. this is highly electronically manipulated, you know, very heavily produced music, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's also, and even on the on Break the Rules, which is on the lower side of that, right, which sounds more like a rock ensemble, even though it's very, very produced. The riff, there's a keyboard riff is like the main melodic riff in the chorus. Or it's like maybe the core. I don't know how it would work structurally, because it's kind of an. I mean, I actually would love to talk about the structure of that song, uh-huh. because it's like. There's like basically the chorus is a pre-chorus, and then the chorus is instrumental, right?
Yeah, which
I'm a percussionist, you guys. So
it's that.
Actually, you know what? You know, Snitty asked me why we don't talk about the music, and so Snitty, I'm going to show you why we don't talk about the music more. So it goes. Actually, sounds a lot like, as I sing, it sounds like a lot like Baby Elephant Walk.
Or I was thinking, it's that. What is that? What is that kind of like country song that has the country song that has like the fiddle hook at the beginning? That da da ba da ba da ba.
I think you're thinking of Cotton Eye Joe.
Oh, man, is it Cotton Eye Joe? Yeah, it sounds like sounds a little bit like Cotton Eye Joe, and that actually like right like the predominance of those sorts of lines, right? Those sort of synth riffs, and the idea, because there's like very often on the second or subsequent times through, there's a vocal sample that goes on top of it, mm-hmm. so it's like singing along with the riff of the song. And I think you're getting, you know, we talk about lyrics a lot, we talk about like we parse the meanings of lyric, but this is sort of in stuff that we've covered in recent memory, this is unique in delegating the function, delegating the melodic hook function to an instrumental that you sing along with, right?
Right.
And it's
right.
The sort of nonverbal right. part of that actually kind of makes it very poppy for me, makes it very like dance music-y, sort of club music-y, music for like a communal experience, right? Because it's not for one person to sing along. It's for hundreds of people to sing along as they're bouncing up and down, presumably in their dancing shoes.
Well, it's like there's an implied na na na.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's that, right, or sha la la or whatever, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Choose your own syllable. What I was gonna say is then you can tie back to the power trio, as we kind of close up this little digression, is that in the performance of Break the Rules, it's interesting because the songs are arranged somewhat differently. Actually, Boom Clap sounds more different, right? In the live version, it's more like a rock song. But in Break the Rules, the melodic hook comes in just out of nowhere, right? It's weird because like it actually sounds similar to the in some ways to the organ riffs on a lot of the Elvis Costello songs that we talked about. But so it's kind of interesting actually talking about Saturday Night Live, because we talked about the performance of Radio Radio, his iconic Saturday Night Live performance, and the keyboard's really important, on Radio Radio. And now here there's like the ghost keyboard, that just comes in. And it's very interesting, right? Cause that line's not played on the guitar. I mean, I am not a melodic instrument person, but even just rhythmically, it did not look like that was like an affected guitar. That was ghost synth.
Yeah, it's playing along to tracks, right? Which a lot of people do. But so like sort of continuing down the rabbit hole of this SNL performance, it seemed clear to me because of certain things where the pitch was a little to one side of the, you know, of the center of the pitch, or rhythmic things are like there were audible breaths. I mean, there were audible sort of gasps for breath in the midst of singing lines, that there was a live mic and we were actually mm-hmm. listening to her sing. So it wasn't like the Ashley Simpson situation where it's just she's lip syncing to tracks, though it is sort of augmented reality music, right? The augmented reality power trio, there actually is an aspect of it, some aspect of it, of the sound that you hear that was actually generated by Charlie XCX in the moment, you know, in the moment of performance. And I think that's important, right? As a sort of generator of material or as a sort of, authenticity, you know, as a sort of person playing in the authenticity stakes, the outfit, like her outfit in Boom Clap was,
a Jasmine romper.
It's a romper, crop top
Princess Jasmine romper. Because it had that, right? There was a vaguely, if not explicitly, like Middle Eastern nodding, then kind of like hippie bohemian 70s, right? It was like the 70s meet the 80s. It was like television's Marquee Moon in romper form.
Uh-huh.
You know, as the 70s, it's a post-punk romper is what I'm saying.
So like, well, I mean, it's an interesting, I don't know, it's an interesting choice of costume, right? Yes, right, Matt. It is an interesting choice of costume.
I thought that was a rhetorical question. yes, I agree, Matt.
And then in the other thing, the outfit was a little more tame for Break the Rules, but she was wearing a kind of leather bondage strappy thing
with bell bottoms.
Yeah.
And this is representing the two pieces of the 70s, the punk and the disco.
Right.
I mean, I'm like being like a little bit sarcastic, but I actually kind of believe the bullshit that I'm saying, as always, because I think that there are these, right? So that there are, you know, in addition to the punkness of being unpunk. I think there is also intentional punkness here. But it's like many layers of post punkness. I've seen this a little bit in some of the press of this being described as being her punk album, and that's, I think, part of the promo. And actually, on the lyrics for Sucker on Rap Genius, there's a little sidebar and a screen capture of a tweet where a fan says, "Who inspires you most when you're writing songs?" And she says, Charlie XCX says, "Sucker was inspired by the Ramones, Barbie, Britney, Bow Wow Wow, and movies like Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains." And so that there is this explicit kind of combining of it's punk pop rather than pop punk, right? If pop punk is bands like, you know, currently or in the 90s, you know, Blink 182 or Green Day, and there are some other, you know, roots of pop punk in some of what we were talking about in the 70s, that this is kind of taking that back around to pop. I mean, and so it is kind of and weirdly, you know, there are ways in which the Ramones, as we discussed, were also punk pop, right? So that really we've gone for full Ouroboros, and now, you know, by punking up the pop, I mean, that's interesting, right? Is she adding Ramones? What is she adding to what? She's adding Ramones to Britney, right?
Right. I mean, and what's but to a certain extent, like, what's the use of? I mean, I don't know. Don't you think it would horrify the Ramones if they realized that they would be reduced to a flavor in the spice cabinet that you could just sort of sprinkle on a little bit of Top 40?
Yeah. And I think the song they would write about is called "I Don't Want to Be a Spice."
I didn't notice the big baseball bat being called out in the in Charlie XCX's lyrics, and I was wondering if she was going to
it's Chekhov's bat beating bat. Let me try that one again. That I just created a tongue twister. It is Chekhov's brat beating bat.
Yeah, and you can't exactly. You can't hang it over the fireplace unless there's a brat going to be beat down with it. So now this is like I think it's a sort of rat hole you can go down into. What do the female pop stars look like that we don't necessarily go down with the that we don't necessarily go down with the men. But here I think her self-presentation is being used to create certain effects, to make sort of certain points about it, right? Like the fact that it's a power trio, the fact that it's an all-female power trio, an aspect that we haven't necessarily talked about yet, not that we have to. The fact that she's costumed in a way, they're costumed in this sort of like space age, you know, sort of 1980s kind of thing. And she's costumed in like a 1970s sort of thing. I don't know. They look like the backing band all looked like to me like they were in the Matrix.
They also remind me a lot of the backing band in Robert Palmer's Addicted to Love, right? Mm. Is that a top of mind for you? Can you conjure that up? It's at top of Google image search, but that's an iconic video from the 80s, right? With Robert Palmer in a suit, backed by a in that video, I believe it is a power quintet of women in dresses with guitars, bass guitar, synthesizer, drums. And it's a slightly different. It's a slightly different effect, but I feel like the all-female backing band dressed in somewhat kind of dated clothing and kind of in a uniform, for me, evokes that iconic video for sure. at least I feel at least echoes of that, and that's like one piece of several strands that are going on in the styling and visual presentation.
Yeah, she's taking it back though, right?
Yeah, so like she's like, what do you mean?
She's
by
sort
that?
Of reclaiming.
Yeah,
I was thinking, you know, every all female, but every costumed all female backup band is you know different in its own way. The idea in Addicted to Love. I mean, it's like these are not meant to be the actual musicians, right? Mm-hmm. They're sort of models. They're there to make a point, and they're there to reflect on the sort of male central figure, the singer, right? And it's
they're sexy automatons, right?
Yeah, right. No, I'm not. The Charlie XCX backing band. They're there because they're punk as fuck, you know. They're actually supposed to be the musicians making the songs, augmented by tracks, though they may be. Yeah,
I think that's right. I think I want to talk about one other kind of element of punk augmented by tracks. That is, I think, another piece of reference here.
Augmented by by punk, augmented by tracks, augmented by a Jasmine romper. I mean, there's too much augmentation to keep it all straight, right?
It suckers all the way down.
Well, and what's the sucker? Yeah, yeah. What is the sucker? And it's almost like the sucker is licked out from the inside, you know, because you end up with this shell, with this sort of candy shell, you know.
How many licks does it take to get out of our constructed reality?
Right, that's
one, two, three. I'm still licking.
and there's so much augmentation going on that it's kind of like, well, is she punk? Yes and no, though. I mean, like, what genre is she? Like, all genres, no genre, right? It's very referential, right? And sort of, as you say, the Ouroboros is you know, reaching all the Ouroboros is giving itself a reach around. That's what I think of that. So, what did you want to say? Augmented by tracks.
So yes, and it's a specific reference. I mean, I think the overall practice of a punk band or a band presenting as punk that plays with backing tracks has precedent in the indie space with a band called The Death Set that I actually was lucky enough to see a few times in New York in the early 2000s, mid 2000s. And The Death Set was a band with two guys who played the guitars and who played over synthesized tracks, right? So they played, you know, like you know, sonically, because they had a kind of high-pitched voices, they were like Bad Brains meets like electronic dance music beats, and so overall that approach of you know, punk has already been augmented by tracks, but then specifically London Queen sounds strikingly similar to one of the Death Set's best songs, Negative Thinking, and just in terms of the tempo, the underlying beat, but even some of the uses of vocal sampling throughout. It's actually I actually don't know if I've done the Googling to see if other people, I mean, I feel like every conspiracy theory or this rips off this that exists has already been said. So, and I think especially because there's a co-writing credit on London Queen for Ariel Rosenberg, better known by his stage name Ariel Pink, who is a pretty reasonably controversial indie musician, and in kind of the let's call it the indie bro space, occupied you know, in the a corner of the spectrum that we were mournfully treading through last week, and so he kind of is in that. You know, I think there is actually a plausible connection here, because Ariel Pink was living, you know, and inhabiting a lot of the same underground music spaces and scenes and circuits as the Death Set. So it's not implausible that there's, at the very least, influence in this mode of kind of augmenting, you know, augmented pop. But there's also, you know, a possible claim for outright kind of cribbing and or plagiarism feels strong. Plagiarism feels strong. I'll say this. Ariel Pink is a plagiarist, among many other things.
I don't know. Like, don't they all, if you're talking about punk and you're talking about sort of a limited sonic palette, you know, and part of limited by design, don't they all sound derivative at a certain point? I mean, they're derivative because of the sort of political bent of the people who make them, right? They're not derivative because of, I don't know, other things.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess that's the interesting thing of when you are, you know, when you are augmenting, when we're in this hyperdimensional augmentation space that we are in here, you actually, right, that we're not in that. We're unconstrained, right? That there's freedom to roam. And in fact, the rest of the album, it's not that the album is, you know, the Ramones, but with some more synthesizers and schoolgirl skirts, right? That it in fact has a lot of different sonic touch points. There are a few songs that like sound like Hall & Oates or like kind of more 80s synth pop. There are a few songs that the last track sounds more like a girl group song, right? And so there's actually a really broad palette here, even though there's kind of some similar lyrical concerns. So I don't know. I don't know that. I guess I could conceivably concede the point that totally surprising that the most punky song on this album sounds like another synthy punk song, a poppy punk song. But it's striking. An immediate connection. When I heard London Queen for the first time, as opposed to the more gradual one, when I heard the song that was co-written by Rivers Cuomo, and it took me a while. First, I was like, "Oh, this song kind of sounds like I Love Rock and Roll," and then I'm like, "Oh, that's because it sounds like Beverly Hills by Weezer, the greatest of the Weezer songs."
Speaking of Beverly Hills, let's talk about London Queen a little bit, right? Like, there's a sort of naivete. I mean, I sort of wonder about the political stance of the record. With respect to sort of excess, right? Like, because of things that Charlie XCX has said about, you know, being a free author of herself, and like in this interview that I heard with her that I'll link in the show notes, she said, you know, "I never play the game just for success, so to speak," which, I mean, God, there's a lot to unpack in that sentence. You know, she sort of makes claims for authority and authenticity, saying like she makes the music that she wants to make. And well, if it happens to be top 40 fodder, that's fine.
So I mean, sue me for being popular.
Yeah. But this seems to like put a certain spin on her relationship with mass culture, or her persona's relationship with mass culture. Right. But this is like, this is a kind of, I'm not sure what the levels of irony are, but like, living the dream like a London queen seems to be a really an embrace of, you know, American consumer culture, American materialism, living the dream like a London queen. I live in Hollywood. I can't stop even though I know I should. It feels so good. So sort of American hedonism and excess are lionized in this song. And this seems to me to be at odds with statements that she's made that she's made in public about sort of, you know, not caring about the trappings of fame and shit.
Right. I mean, it's interesting. What I'm kind of stuck on is, what does it mean to be living the dream like a London queen in the USA?
Yeah.
What is it that because what is a non-London queen? The queen is in London. And so I'm having trouble, the contradiction of living in the USA and a London queen is I'm fixating on it.
Yeah, I mean the idea, I mean it is their telos, right? Like to flock across the ocean, you know, Iggy Azalea from Australia and Lord from New Zealand and Charlie XCX from London, or this character's from, I mean, you know, I actually don't know where exactly she's from, but the London Queen.
She's from Cambridge, actually.
So there you go. The London Queen is has to leave, right? Like sort of has to leave London.
Right. Huh. Right, so that, I mean, it's interesting. Then in that way, though, it's like it's like taking the empire into your own hands, right? That, like, you know, whereas you know, empire was a series of principal agent relationships, right? Many many agents of the crown and agents of agents of agents of agents going out to the colonies. Here, like, the queen gets to business and heads across the ocean.
The queen is the executive producer, right? There's this sort of upside down pyramid. There's this sort of upside down inverted pyramid structure. If you think of like a bunch of principal agent relationships
right.
as being, you know, a sort of pyramid structure with the sovereign at the top, or I suppose God at the top, and then directly below, you know, God vests power in the sovereign, and the sovereign, devolves power onto agents. This is more a sort of exploitation of labor relationship, right? Where you can imagine the pyramid upside down and everything flowing down into the point of that pyramid, or else, you know, I don't know, wealth being extracted upward, you know, off the backs of all of the suckers, and concentrating, pooling at the very top of the pyramid where the London Queen is, where the London Queen is living the dream and doing, you know, doing business.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think that maybe there's a little more to be said with that, about that song, but this discussion makes me think also of gold coins.
Huh.
Right, because in that this comes in, my grills are so neat, drip icy cold, got offshore bank accounts and diamond blue palm trees. My platinum troubles are drowning in pink champagne, escape into the sky in my own private jet. That's what I dream of in my head. And the chorus, gold coins everywhere, dollars up in the air. It's a billionaire's love affair. Gold coins out the window, money pours like the rain falls, and I'm spending like I don't care.
Yeah.
Like I don't care.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's this is still the dream, right? Like, you actually mm-hmm. don't get out of the dream in this song. It's this sort of fantasy of sort of wealth and indulgence on a rich kids of Instagram scale, and the mm-hmm.
On a Gossip Girl, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I mean, it's sort
what
of...
What Gossip Girl character would Charlie XCX be?
Well, there was a Charlotte, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was a Charlie, yeah.
I mean, there was a Charlie, and then there was a Lola, right? The real Charlotte went by Lola, right?
I think she's I think she's Bizarro Vanessa.
Probably, yeah.
From the alternate dimension, right? So there's I guess now's a good time to tell you about my Crisis of Infinite Earths Gossip Girl fan. So the Gossip Girl multiverse. And I actually now want to write this. I think that the Charlie XCX is Bizarro. All the Bizarro characters have British accents. and they're like the opposite. Right, so like,
yeah,
Bizarro,
right, exactly.
Bizarro Chuck Bass is Ed Westwick with like a Cockney accent, and he's like a Victorian, like a newsie.
Right, shine your shoes, Governor. I'm Chuck Bass.
I'm Charlie Bass.
Roy, Charlie Bass, my name. I was just imagining like how those, and they get, of course, they probably get very dirty and very like, very weird as well, right? Like, stop fucking me with your tentacles, Eric Vanderwoodson said.
This is just about the science and speculative fiction, Matthew.
Yeah. Yeah, mine's about ethics and journalism. So the fantasy here, right, like is of being a Gossip Girl. And I mean, I sort of wonder, this is one where to me the irony is a lot clearer, right? Because of things like icy cold, sort of diamond blue, platinum, like a lot of reference to sort of metals or to sort of cold, cold material things. These aren't, and there isn't another person in the picture, right? The billionaire's love affair is with acquisition and possession and sort of excess rather than being with everyone else. And so it's sort of easier to see the element of social critique in this particular track, right?
And even with the other people that are here, these rock stars buy me pearls topped off with rubies rare. I stack it so high, build a pretty green castle wall. Right, yeah. I'll hide inside my fortress.
Yeah, yeah. It's the rock stars are not really to be had relationships with. It's you're inside your pearl fortress. You're inside your hollow sucker.
Right. Right. Exactly. The sucker dome.
Uh-huh.
Two pop stars enter. One pop star leaves. Should we talk about Break the Rules?
I guess so.
If we're talking about Gossip Girl, the gossip verse, and there actually is, in some ways this is as much it was just a silly digression, the Gossip Girl multiverse is not a bad way to think about the personae that she inhabits on this album, right? And that there are actually a cast of characters that actually map really well onto Gossip Girl or a lot of the tropes from like high school fiction, teen fiction, right? And that Break the Rules is the battle hymn of the teen girl republic, uh-huh. Right? With the chorus that you said early on. I don't want to go to school. I just want to break the rules. Boys and girls across the world putting on our dancing shoes.
Yeah.
Going to the discotheque, getting high, getting wrecked. I don't want to go to school. I just want to break the rules.
Except the rules of like meter and rhyme, right?
That's the most draconian rules of them all,
right? I don't know how much rebellion you can squeeze into four beats to the bar, I don't know.
So what you're saying is that you want Charlie XCX's next album to be like an amorphous, shape-shifting, free jazz noise record.
Noise record, right? Like Dave Brubeck is twice the punk you are. But I'm often struck by the disjunction between conventional musical forms and the sort of rebellious content of the, you know, of the music.
All the way back to the Ramones, though, right?
Sure.
I mean,
yes, yeah, punk to the birth of punk. It's very, you know, it's sort of very, it's very interesting to me. I'm not sure that it makes it less rebellious for being sort of musically conventional. I mean, we've sort of talked about the letterpress and the Sharpie, right? Like the tools of production that you can seize are the tools that you're likely to use to, you know, try to dismantle the system that you find oppressive. But I don't know. It always like the high revolutionary aspirations and the, you know, and the very conservative musical instantiation of those is always interesting to me.
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you see there's micro cycles, right? And I mean, this is a big thing that we kind of uncovered and was kind of in the structure of the 1970s sweep that we did over the summer. And if you've just rejoined us or just joined us for this, go back. If you go back about 10 episodes or so, you'll find yourself not in 10 weeks ago's pop music, but in the 1970, maybe 10 to 12 weeks ago. So kind of in August, July, August, September, we were doing a historical quarter focused on punk and post-punk. And there you have these swings, right, from the Ramones, much more kind of tightly controlled, much more kind of, you know, within the constraints of 4/4, and then the much more sprawling Sex Pistols, right? And then you have like some amount of synthesis with Television and their bound jams, right? They're on the one hand rhythmically tight, but tight with spiraling guitar solos, kind of within these rigid beats, right? So that you have these micro cycles of kind of formalism and kind of and more anarchy, more formal anarchy or kind of rhythmic anarchy. And so this is, I mean, I guess there's an interesting question of what would be the case? What against what would this be rebelling? And in some ways, you know, and it's really interesting. I think about the EDM remix that I was doing core exercises to yesterday. And I think that, and this gets back to something I wanted to talk about with the song. I mean, I want to think about how the chorus goes. And so the chorus is a build, right? The chorus is, if I'm remembering correctly, like quarter notes on a like snare drum sounding synth pad, right? Yeah. It's eighth notes, right? Or maybe it starts with quarter notes and it builds to eighth notes.
It starts without them. But that like, yeah, that sort of snare, that sort of, that's a, you know, rock and roll move, right? Like tunk, yeah. Tunk, tunk, tunk.
It starts to rev up. The train starts going.
Yeah.
And then the melodic hook comes in. And I feel
and then
like
you
I'm
drop kinda, the bass.
Well, no. So this is but no. But that's the thing. No, she doesn't drop the bass. She picks up the treble.
Right.
And that's exactly what I think it's in opposition to. Right. That So in the remix, the remix was really unsatisfying because they did drop the bass, and Charlie XCX doesn't drop the bass, and that is, I remember thinking about that as I on the fourth crunch, or whatever it was that I was doing during that song, a lunge maybe, some kind of weird suspended lunge, And that's very interesting, right? That a lot of electronic dance music, dubstep, and even a lot of hip hop right now is centered around the drop, right? Whether it's trap music or a lot of these genres have something that is light, and then the beat drops, and that's the moment of release of tension is heavy bass kind of breaking a tranquil surface, and so this is very different in that it's rather than something dropped, rather than a heavy object dropped onto a tranquil surface or a mirror, and shattering it, and sending the shards wubbing off in every direction. This is revving up and kind of taking off. Whether it's a train or some other mechanical contraption. And so I think that. It's actually not that is a non-trivial difference of propulsiveness as opposed to dropping and dropping down and kind of and those modes that are in a lot of other contemporary pop music that are on the new synths list, right? And this kind of gets back to what kind of music is Charlie XCX, because before I asked you if she was a punk band, I was going to ask of which plays. Excuse me, Matt, this album just came out, which of my playlists should I put it in?
Oh, new synth. I mean, that would to me be an easy question. It's new synths all the way, right?
But I think that it demands a second quadrant, right? That there's almost a need to draw another axis about like I don't know, like drops and ramps, right?
Yeah.
because like that there are ways in which that so that it's not synth in name only, it's synth in instrumentation, but like guitarish rhythmically, and that's I think an interesting,
or so almost like spiritually, right? It's sort of a spiritual member of the new guitars playlist and but a literal member of the new synths playlist.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it, and I think that is like, and it's done very well, and I think is what gives the album texture and a lot of interest kind of throughout is the ways in which these are combined.
Yep, I think that's right. So what about the aspect of rebellion? Like, what sort of rebellion is this? Right, like it's a rebellion that requires a costume, right? And any rebellion that you have to dress up for isn't necessary, I don't think, is worth the name. You know, if you have to have dancing shoes, then your dancing is not a subversive political act.
That's an interesting. So a real revolution takes you as you are.
Yeah, exactly.
That is very interesting, right? So that there's a revolutionary poser.
So like, Shay
doesn't have a Shay shirt.
Right. Right. The idea, no, he has a Bart Simpson shirt, I think, right? Like, right. That was a funny cartoon I saw once, is Che Guevara wearing a Bart Simpson t-shirt.
Speaking of which, there's an homage to the Simpsons bus driver in the Break the Rules video.
Uh-huh.
Did you see it?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, if you watch the video, there's a scene where they all get on a where they all pile on the bus, and the guy, the actor playing the bus driver, looks a lot like Otto Mann. Yeah, which is like really interesting, right?
Yeah, that would be the point of reference that they want to associate with the
all that old stuff. All that old stuff, like The Simpsons and discotheques, they're all pre-XCX, the year of our Lord, pre-XCX.
is that something that Europeans say, like discotheque, say it unironically? Because like the word discotheque, the word disco is not part of American discourse, like not even a little bit, right?
Right, no, not really. I don't know if it ever really was, even during the days of disco.
Yeah.
Right? I guess we have to ask Whit Stillman, right?
So I don't know, but in interviews I've heard her describe like being a teenager and going and playing at warehouse raves, like illegal warehouse raves, at 4 a.m. and that like this is what she would do, and like the idea that you go to the place, I was thinking about like the club, being in the club, right? Mm-hmm. Like and the club is a space set apart, the club is a The club is the kind of inside of the notional hollow sucker that we've been mm-hmm. talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Like, where you go in order to sort of blur some of those lines, where you go in order to sort of, perform identity, where you go, But in doing that, like, you reveal how sort of regimented is your vision of rebellion, you know, how, mm-hmm. how much it requires, that you dress up and that you look and act a certain way, that you do all these things.
So you're saying that if, while Lord is our queen bee, Charlie XCX is Pop Stalin.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or pop Chairman Mao, right?
Right.
Like sort of saying let you know, purporting to say let a thousand flowers bloom, but dressing everyone up in you know, drab woolen overcoats and whatnot.
Right. Huh. Well, I for one welcome our new pop overlords.
Do you think she's gonna? I mean, because Charlie XCX kind of had the blessing of the indie music press, and there is more indie music press than just Pitchfork, right? Like, I'm sure there is an outlet for whom Pitchfork are a bunch.
I live in a totalitarian regime in which there is only the state newspaper, Pitchfork Media. but yeah, no, she, especially with True Romance, she was definitely a indie favorite,
sort of indie, sort of indie darling. Right. And that, like, I wonder if there's enough subversion, right? Like if there's enough, because like so much of the persona is about subversion or rebellion. And though there are aspects of it in the music, it seems like a flavor. It seems like a spice that's been sort of sprinkled sparingly on top of some pretty conventional musical materials.
It's just a pinch of Ramones and just a shake of the Sex Pistols. Just right. Like a dash.
And the idea, yeah, is the recipe, right? Is the recipe for pop stardom, you know, take her out of the oven. She's done. And I wonder if she sort of risks the, sort of alienating the bass, right? And you know, it's all about that bass, no mass market audience.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that's an interesting question in terms of trajectory, because this is an interesting point. This is neither the start of the trajectory nor the kind of, you know, place where Taylor Swift is with 1989, nor where Jenny Lewis is with The Voyager, right? So this is kind of an interesting – we've kind of been plotting different points in the kind of pop star trajectory in the kind of the main thrust of this quarter. And so this is an interesting point where there's, you know, where there's a lot of potential pathways, and so that itself is extremely interesting. It will be something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think we'll be looking forward to keeping an eye on it. All right, well, I think we'll leave it there for Charlie XCX. This has been a really interesting record to listen to, and it's, you know, it's good to be back into the, it's good to be, you know, in the independent space again, don't you think? Like in the-
yes, just away from that terrible, terrible people who talk about Panera in their songs.
Oh God, yeah.
Did you know that he has a Christmas album?
Oh God, don't even start with me.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, you thought I couldn't ruin Christmas. You thought the Bright Eyes Christmas album ruined Christmas. Let's listen to the Mark Kozelek Sings Christmas Carols album. And I wish I was making that up, but I'm not making that up.
So angry. All right, I'm going to go and pound my head into the wall, or maybe just put on my dancing shoes and go to the discotheque. But until then, you know, whether you are listening to new pop that is really new synths, or new synths that is really new guitars, or the Ramones that is really Britney with a dash of the Sex Pistols, make sure that you're always keeping it real.